morning, everyone. Today is Wednesday, June 27th, 2018, and we are here for the Mynlar Steering Committee hearing. The agenda has been made public, and I will be following that. To open up, we'd be inviting the deputy registrars to come forward. And before we start, I would indicate to all of the testifiers, both the stakeholders and the agencies, that in the last month or so, I have been made aware of a number of complaints. I was at a deputy registrar's meeting in Hutchinson, of all places. I thought that was pretty convenient. And there I heard multiple complaints concerning the progress that's being made. I would invite folks to comment on those so that the agencies are aware of what your thoughts are. I would also indicate that we do have the June 2018 executive summary that was included in the Mynlar's quarterly report. And I would invite the stakeholders to comment on the report that was provided to us by the agencies, for which I thank them. And with that, we would start with the deputy registrar's update. And we've got Donnie Vossen and Gay Smith. If you would come forward, please. Doesn't you know? Welcome doesn't make any difference to me at all who goes first. But if you would identify yourself for the record, and then just give us an update as to what has been happening with the Mynlar system between the last hearing that we had in April and today.
Okay. This is Gay Smith from South St. Paul Deputy. My name is Donnie Vossen from the Brainerd Deputy Office. My wife and I own and hands-on operate the Brainerd License Office. I apologize if I offend anybody here with my testimony, but I am angry. I'm going to open up talking about the human toll and the collateral damage Mynlar is taking on my staff, our taxpaying customers, let alone the numerous deputy registrar offices across the state. Our personal lives have been turned upside down. The year before Mynlar's, my office had 21 unscheduled leave days taken for illness, funerals, etc. Since Mynlar's, we have lost 58 days. I previously testified three of my clerks were hospitalized due to stress. I also want you to know that Melissa from another office thought she was having a heart attack. Her doctor gave her meds for anxiety. Mike from the metro area and now has extremely high blood pressure. Sean from northern office had a heart attack, as did Mike from a southern office. Coincidence? I think not. Ask yourselves what this Mynlar stress is going to do to our workmen's comp rates. We have seen two deputy registrars of our offices close. We have seen county offices lose money and cut back hours and other services to compensate. Private deputies are dipping into their retirement, second mortgaging homes, and maxing out credit cards to meet payroll. What Mynlar's has done to destroy the value of our business is criminal. There's not a week goes by that I do not see a want ad for a deputy office staff opening. We have lost so many knowledgeable personnel across the state. The lack of experience and a defeated optimism are increasing error rates. There is also a lack of morale and burnout of state employees, though they're not allowed to address it. Still, we deputies have to deal with it every time we call DVS for assistance. For 8 years, Minnesota collected a tech fee on every driver's license and motor vehicle transaction to pay for Mynlar's. And what do we have to show for those millions upon millions? The total sum so far is 12 years of failure. Mynlar's is a time-consuming system that is poorly designed and defective, uneditable, and unauditable. What genius designs a system where the end user cannot edit? Even if every fault, gap, or defect of Mynlar's is magically fixed today, it would not change the fact that this is not a user-friendly, intuitive, or smart system. Technology capabilities double in less than a year. That knowledge should make everything faster, smarter, not dumber, and slower. But when no one listens to the end user, Failure is guaranteed, and Mlrs is that proof. MNIT has recently created a second new version of Mlrs called MV2. They tell us it's simply a feature to better help with enhancements. I find it odd, though, that it took over 6 months for DVS to explain to us what MV2 is, and then only when we stumbled upon it and asked. If MV2 is so fantastic, why didn't DVS excitedly tell us about it without us having to pry? That is just more proof of the lack of communication we have been complaining about with DVS for years. Ironically, our last scheduled communication meeting with DVS was canceled, and not everyone was notified. I am on the executive steering committee, but had to learn about MV2 through backdoor channels. What else should I mistrust? Also, is the Mlrs code so bad that time, personnel, and money had to be diverted to create a second version? I often wonder if DVS hierarchy is being honest with us, or if this is more sleight of hand. There are many caring and burned-out worker bees at DVS and MNIT, so please don't misread this. They do a fantastic job of making this debacle less worse than it could be. Though this is not a tour of duty, many of those state employees need medals for what they have saved the state in monies and embarrassment. A new fix went live June 24th. It looks good so far, but I'm guarded because last fall's update, we actually lost abilities in order to stabilize the system. Then the fix in April was so minimal, it was hard to detect. Besides, in April, the one big fix for deputies was discovered by a deputy, and he tells me he's going to be sending MNIT that bill pretty soon. Deputies appreciate the legislature's effort this past session to give us some financial relief. Though a deputy relief bill was passed overwhelmingly, it was vetoed, and suddenly that overwhelming support disappeared. I'd like to remind the governor and legislators that whatever checkbook relief funds do come from, it does not matter because it ultimately comes from the same taxpayer. If the governor does not understand the severity of what is happening here, he either needs new advisors or he is not listening. Deputies would welcome the opportunity to sit down with him and explain this from an end user's perspective. And Governor, if you are listening, I implore you to set your ego aside and call a special session to get this fix started before the whole deputy registrar infrastructure completely collapses. This isn't about what you want, Governor. It's about what the taxpayers need. This terrible system is disrupting their lives, and you do not want this failure to be your legacy. I believe Minnesota should hire an outside third party to do a tech assessment of Mlrs to help decide if Minnesota's finest is on the right track or if we should look elsewhere for different titling software. Regardless, the system we end up will do no good if Minnesota has no deputy registrars left to collect the monies due the state. I'd like to summarize by stating the reason I'm being this blunt is because I care. As a deputy registrar, I want this fixed. As a taxpayer, I demand this gets fixed now. Thank you. And Governor, if you are hearing this, with all due respect, call a special session. Do your job so we can do ours. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bossen. Ms. Smith. Identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Gay Smith. I am a manager at the License Center in the city of South St. Paul. We are located in the City Hall, and we work well with a public-private partnership. And we are very involved in working and trying to work out a solution for Mlrs, and we have been involved from the time of HP, from the time we were supporting the tech fee. What we are noticing is lack of communication, lack of trust, lack of openness. We ask for all of the defects and gaps that are out there that they know of, and we cannot get that list. We need to know what we're dealing with, where we're at with this system, because in the end, we are the ones being yelled at day in and day out, and our staff, and it's taking a toll on everyone, including DVS staff. We're all short right now. We're all very frustrated. But if it takes 6 months to get one small release out, for example, it states in this release that the trailers, we will be able to renew those with a non-use. That's not entirely true. It's not generalized because there's certain trailers that don't work. There's certain aspects of each situation that do not work. And to find out that there people are being pulled off of MNLARS to work on another system on the side, I feel like I just walked into a bar and grill and then found out there's a gambling casino in the back room. And they're using our taxpayer dollars to do that. And they're using our staff and our deputy registrar system that we use to serve our citizens statewide. Our communication has not gotten better. Personnel needs to be open. I'm open. Donnie's open. And that's probably why we're not well-liked, because we are honest and we want to state the facts. Just say they don't all work. I have lien holders that I have been working with that the data integrity, they are not even listed on as a lien holder, and the title was transferred again to somebody else. I have NMVDIS, where wholesale auctions are selling these vehicles. Minnesota's not getting that money any longer. They're going to Illinois. They're going to Indiana. They're going to Wisconsin to get titles because they cannot get them here correctly. I have titles that have no VINs listed. And we're new into this release. And as I told Dana Bailey and Joan just a little bit ago, it's too early to tell if it even works, because we're still starting to see a few things that are popping up. Now, those things weren't fixed in this release, but somehow it touched somewhere in that system. So now when a record comes up, it says plate not assigned. And if we can't support our citizens and our law enforcement and the individuals that we trust to keep us safe, I feel like we're doing a disservice to them as well. The frustration of the system going up and down, that is also an issue in the performance. If titles are printing on Monday morning and we go down, that should not be an issue. Not in today's technology. We have that capability out there. There is that service out there. And there has been COTS programs or custom off the shelf. There is technology that is available that can be done with this system. I understand egos. I understand where they want to prove something. But right now, we're all swallowing a big swallow and saying, it's not about us, it's about our citizens, it's about getting the correct revenue. There are commercial vehicles out there that paid $100 when they should have paid $3,000. Are we going to go back and say, hey, you owe us $2,900 more? And that's one deputy office. The revenue that we need to fix our road and bridges, and believe you not, I travel those a lot every day. I travel 126 miles on my way to work and 126 miles on my way home. I know what our roads and bridges are like. And I expect them to be fixed so I can continue to work and to get to work and to get home to my family. This is not just about that. And it's about our dealers who can't even get lien holders because they can't get the lien cards. Or they can't get the lien on the system because we don't know how to fix it. We need to be able to serve our citizens. We need that tracking, so if we edit, we can go after our staff. We can go after them. We are not stupid out there. If we were, this system wouldn't be so successful. And we want to save the state money, not cost them money. But right now, there are so many transactions we still cannot do that we have to mail in. And we have customers that do the mail-in and the online renewals, don't receive it, but their checks were cashed within a couple days. But they receive nothing. They come into us and are frustrated. Handicapped individuals who aren't getting their plates and stickers in two or three different times. That's not the way we treat our Minnesota citizens. And we take what we do to heart. I've been doing this 34 years. I have been a public deputy registrar for 17. I have been a private deputy registrar. I've been a rural. I've been a metro. And I've seen the differences in all the things that deputy registrars do, but the one thing they all do is they care about their citizens, their customers, and their communities. And right now, we're getting broke down so hard because we can't serve. I have paperwork that I will be giving the legislative auditor today, because I understand that with the data privacy, you guys can't see how these errors are affecting the dealers, the citizens, all the errors in the fee amounts. So the only place for it to go is with the legislative auditor. So I encourage anyone who comes across any deputy registrar, send their information to the legislative auditor, because that's the only place we hope things will get fixed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Are there any other deputy registrars in the audience that wish to come forward and testify? We do have. Come forward, please.
My name is Deanna Schweitzer, and I'm with Deputy Register 160 in Prior Lake, which is Scott County. We are privately owned, and we wouldn't be here if we could roll out a system that didn't have gaps and defects. We should be looking for enhancements and improvements, but at this time we are still unable to do the simplest of tasks, transferring personalized plates and spending more money to fix gaps and defects. Is not where I would want to be as a taxpayer after spending 10 years and hundreds of millions of dollars creating a system that is falling short of expectations from a taxpayer's perspective and from a deputy that uses it. Again, I don't know moving forward where the money needs to come from, but I find it very disheartening that the governor would veto our bill to get reimbursed for a system we didn't have a choice in using. And now we continue to work with that system and work with the state to make those improvements. And I'm all for that because we need to give our taxpayers a system that works. Just last night before I left work, after closing hours, I was dealing with a towing company that was told by the police they could not release the vehicle to the customer, even though they had title in hand, VIN matches, because the plates on the car didn't match. Proof of ownership, legal proof of ownership, is that title. I do not understand where our communication gaps are, but we do know the gaps and the problems with the system is that information is not correct. That data is not always correct, and it is causing citizens that paid tax money to have an improved system, not 10 steps back with a couple benefits. And what's frustrating is that taxpayer now had to spend time and energy getting their car out of impound because the plates didn't match. I had to spend time and energy to help them release the vehicle. So all in all, this system, working with deputies, working with the police departments, has data that is unfortunately causing mounds of problems that just shouldn't be there. We should be farther ahead than that. And I'm concerned. I look at it, the system, as like you just bought a brand new vehicle and it is worse than the vehicle you traded in. It should have enhancements and better capabilities, and instead I feel like we just went backwards and now we're trying to play catch up and fix things that should have already been in place. All procedures, all thoughts, everything we've done before the system rolled out should have been addressed and had, if it was going to be an issue, we should have known right off the bat and how to work around that. And communication with the state, although it has been improving, I feel that there is a lot going on and things are going to get missed, and we are all human, and therefore it needs to continue to get better for us to do our jobs, and we're willing to keep working with the state on making these fixes, but I question whether or not some other system should be in place and hold the accountability to all parties to make it correct. I guess that's all I would like to say. Just the impact has been, like Johnny had said, to people personally in our office, high levels of stress dealing with the public, going above and beyond, trying to help them with police departments and law enforcement to understand, I'm sorry, that is the right plate that should be on that car. It should have never got impounded, but they're going off what data they comes through, and that is the Mindler system. And I would like to be reimbursed at the deputy level for the impact that it's had on us so that we can continue to help the state either improve this system or move to a completely different system where we don't have data issues causing our taxpayers problems. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming forward. Any other deputy registrars that wish to come forward and testify? Seeing none, Mr. Lambert from the Auto Dealers Association, if you'd care to come forward. State your name for the record, Mr. Lambert, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is Scott Lambert. I am president of the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. Mr. Chairman and senators and legislators, we've been very pleased to be part of the steering committee headed up by Dana Bailey. We continue to meet weekly, and it's good we have some avenue to discuss the ongoing work of the repair of Minlars. But nonetheless, we still have serious concerns, and I'm going to touch on four issues this morning. In January, MADA participated in the development of the Minlars roadmap. 20 of our top priorities were included. Since then, one has been addressed. The title-only titles to be issued was part of the 1.11 release. None of our priorities were in the 1.12 release, and nothing is slated for 1.13. We do have four items in the 1.14 release. They're relatively modest. But since 1.12 took 6 months to do, I would be pleasantly surprised if this got done this calendar year. So we are just a few weeks away from the first anniversary of the launch of Minlars, and progress, from our viewpoint, towards a working system is slow. In fact, it's pretty much a crawl. The second issue is EVTR. As you know, we've been very critical of the way the EVTR program has been conducted. We had a good, solid vendor in place. He was offering a reliable product at a reasonable price. But they were conducting about 80,000 transactions a year, and they were growing. But the agency threw them aside for an inexperienced and unprepared vendor. The new vendor was chosen solely because they had the lowest cost, which the RFP, in our opinion, overemphasized. They have no track record of offering this product in any other state, nor do they have access to the dealer management software, which is critical to the efficiency of an EVTR transaction. Additionally, the state did not require the software to be programmed to allow for ACH transactions. This means there's going to be an unnecessary lag time between when a dealer submits a title application and when the deputy receives the funds for the transaction, further reducing the benefits of an EVTR. There's not much there, frankly. Now, they might be able to get something released in the third quarter, but we have demoed this product and we still have serious concerns. Bottom line is that under DVS management, the whole EVTR system has been managed down and is basically going backwards. Third, communications. In late February, the agencies promised dealers would receive Minlar's updates every 2 weeks. That schedule has not been kept up. Informational emails coming every 4 to 6 weeks. Another one was just released on Monday. The agency claims the lack of communication has been because they don't have relevant or timely information to share. In the middle of this disaster, they don't have information to share with us. However, we have repeatedly asked that even the most basic DVS production numbers, which are sent to the deputy registrars on a daily basis, would be helpful. Dealers would appreciate knowing simple things like title backlogs. Communications are always a struggle with the agency. Finally, the deputy registrars, and I think you heard some of that concern just now. We're concerned about the financial health of the deputies. I'm afraid I don't have good stats on this, but anecdotally, we just keep hearing stories of deputies, both public and private, refusing dealer work for various periods of time. Don't send me anything for a week. We got to try and get caught up. It's concerning. If the deputies continue to be overwhelmed with the sometimes complicated transactions that the dealers bring them, we're going to have fewer outlets to conduct our business, and this could snowball fast, and we are concerned about it. We'll be conducting our own regional meetings with our members in July, and I hope to get a better grasp of that situation. Mr. Chairman, there's lots I could talk about with Minlar's, but I think those are the priorities we wanted to discuss today.
Thank you, Mr. Lambert. Are there any other stakeholders in the audience that wish to come forward and testify? Mr. Moore? Please state your name and proceed with your testimony as to who you represent and tell us what you want to visit with us about.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Vic Moore. I'm from the firm of Franzen & Moore, and I represent the Manheim Auto Auctions in Minnesota. There's one in Shakopee, the North Star Auto Auction, and there's one in Maple Grove, the Minneapolis Auto Auction. Just very briefly, for those of you that aren't familiar with the auto auctions, and most residents of the state and consumers are not, but the auto auctions basically transfer or auction a vehicle from one dealer to another dealer. And the North Star, our Minneapolis auction, is meeting today, and they will move over 100 vehicles in one day at their auction. Consumers don't know this, but many of the vehicles, the used cars that they buy at auto dealers, come from the auto auctions because the dealers go there looking for particular cars. I reported to you at the last legislative hearing that the titles are starting to come in a very timely manner. I just checked with my two general managers this morning, and they confirmed that is still occurring. So they're very pleased that the titles are coming in a timely manner now. The auto auctions operate under a national standard where they really only have 21 days to issue a secured title or to get a secured title from one dealer to another. And when Menlars first started, they were going months without any titles. So what would happen, and it was particularly troubling from out-of-state dealers, they come from all over the United States. They would take their vehicle, they'd drive it to Florida or Indiana or wherever. The title wouldn't show up. They'd then have to bring the vehicle all the way back to Minnesota, get their money back, get reimbursed from the auctions for their travel. And what has happened is that a lot of these dealers just aren't coming back to Minnesota now. And this is not something that I raise with you. There's not a prioritization issue that the steering committee can, the Menlars Stakeholder Steering Committee can do to correct that problem. It's really a marketing problem. I am honored to sit on the Executive Stakeholder Steering Committee, and I've been pleased with the work that Dana Bailey and her staff have done, but it's been a little bit frustrating for our auctions because that has been a huge loss of revenue for them. And they are trying, if there was some way for the state to get the word out that we're open for business and we're doing well or something positive, but they just continue to hear very negative things. So I think basically the last time, Representative Torkelson, you kind of summarized my remarks as good news and bad news. The good news is that the titles really are coming in a timely fashion. The bad news is that we still haven't recovered from the loss of dealers from other states. A couple other points. I was prepared to tell you that we're excited about the EVTR. The Menlars is opening that up now to used vehicles. And previously, it was just for new vehicles. So this provides a great opportunity for the auto auctions now to have EVTR on site so they can apply for titles electronically for used vehicles. I am a little concerned with Scott Lambert's remarks because we don't have the background or the history, so anything we can do is going to be new and better for us. But hopefully they can get that worked out with the department because we really are looking forward to a faster way to expedite the title process, and that would be a way to do that. One last other concern, and it's not a major concern, but our titles got processed quicker because of the expedited titles. And you'll probably hear from the department later today that they are now going to turn over some of the expedited title process to the deputy registrars, which is great news. That's great news for all of us. I am a little concerned that this is going to generate a huge volume. Right now, I don't think a lot of dealers and others understand that they can get an expedited title and pay $20 for it. So I raised that at our last steering committee meeting, and it was recognized by the department that we're pretty predictable. We know we're going to have 100 every Wednesday and 100 every Thursday, and hopefully the department can kind of prepare for that so that we don't get caught up in a huge volume crunch at the department and denied the expedited title. So I think by and large I have to report to you that I'm honored to be on the steering committee. I'm very pleased with the work they're doing. And as far as our titles are going, they're coming in a timely fashion. And I don't know that there's anything we collectively can do to market the good news that we're open for business for out-of-state dealers.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Anyone else, any other stakeholders who want to come forward before we call the departments up? Seeing none, Commissioner Clyburn, I see you in the audience. Would you like to come forward? I do not see Commissioner Dolman.
Commissioner O'Hara is here.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner O'Hara is here. We're going to send up Dana Bailey and Joan because I think you're going to have more technical questions initially, and I'll save any comments or questions you have at the end. If that...
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner. That's just fine.
Good morning, members. Mr. Chair, how are you?
Ms. Bailey, just fine.
Thank you.
Are you going to go first?
Yes, please. If I may, I'd like to walk us through the PowerPoint, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Yeah, that would be fine. Please keep in mind that we have had it now for a while, and I don't know about others, but I have read it. So
okay.
go through it fairly quickly.
I'll be quick.
And then we'll go to questions. Ms. Bailey.
Yes, I'll be quick. Okay. So these are, I'll just walk us through the highlights of the report and also updates since we gave the report to you on June 11th. The first is obvious. We just released 112 into the system on Sunday, June 24th. So far, so good. We're all keeping an eye on it. I know the deputy registrars are helping us with that. We're working back and forth with deputy registrars, waiting for information, or hoping to get information if people are seeing problems. And so those lines of communication are open. I just want to note that this is the largest release that's gone into the system since its launch in 2017. And we use the same process, the same user acceptance testing process that we tested in 111.2. We use that again. We thought it went well. We did both UAT demos and live UAT in St. Paul. And we had five deputy registrars with us on the phone on Sunday when we deployed the release. They all gave us a thumbs up after they were able to process their transactions. And so we move forward with the release. I'll keep moving. 113, which, as you know, is we will meet the statutory effective date for duplicate titles of August 1st. That's scheduled for late July. There are other items in 113 that Joan can talk about. And as you mentioned during our last Oversight Committee meeting, you wanted us to get that reprioritization process done, and we did. And I think the best news coming out of that reprioritization process is that our stakeholders and DVS agreed on 100% of the items that they prioritized together. And that credit goes to Donnie Vosen. We were, through that process, we were doing everything we could to make sure that all priorities were represented from both deputy registrars and DVS, and Donnie suggested that they do it together, and it yielded this 100% result of agreement on both fronts, and we're really happy about that. And as was mentioned, yes, on July 9th, we will open up expedite title functionality or expedite title processing back to deputy registrars. And again, I would just give that credit to the deputy registrars for coming to the table with a proposed solution that DVS was able to work through. And so we're happy that that's happening again. In terms of the team, you know, after session and not getting additional funding, we had to reassess what we could do with the current resources we had. So we're no longer seeking to fill all the vacancies we had. Instead, we're trying to be a lot more surgical and intentional about the needs that we have based on the priorities that are in front of us, and how long we can actually make the funding last and get the best results with the dollars that we have. We're also working to transition the team, so there's a lot of knowledge transfer that's happening. We know that there will be an eventual contractor ramp down, so we want to make sure that we get all of that knowledge transfer in the next coming months before a ramp down must occur. I'll move into the performance measures that are in statute for us to report out on. Gaps and defects performance measures number one and number two. The MNLARS master list tracks known gaps and defects identified by system stakeholders. That list is continually updated and refreshed and to make sure that it regularly aligns with stakeholder priorities. And as of the report in June 1st, that list was down from 284 in May to 163, and 112 addressed a large number of those gaps and defects. And I know you'll have questions about a secret list, and I'll let Joan address that list. It's not secret. It's just not something that we're comfortable from a security purpose sharing broadly. And we invited those that requested to see those items to come in and talk through that list with us. But it's not something that we felt comfortable sending out without the ability to have that conversation about what the contents of that list are. For editing functionality, the good news is we have given We were able to give the liaisons who work directly with deputy registrars certain editing functionalities for titles and for plates and stickers. They also are able to correct errors made at the counter, just, you know, regular everyday human error. So when deputy registrars call them, there are certain editing functionalities that they're able to perform on behalf of the deputy registrar. We know that deputy registrars are looking for future editing capabilities, and we hope to build those into the system. We're not certain yet whether or not we will be able to based on the time and the money that we have left, but we've listed transaction cancellation, inventory management, editing an unpaid transaction, and updating title and reg records outside of transactions. We know that those are priorities of deputy registrars. We know that having that functionality would make it easier for them to do their jobs. It's not about not wanting to deliver that functionality. It's about the time and the you know, expertise it takes to do it. For title turnaround, you know, we had an uptick after we lost the Department of Revenue staff. But we've got those staff back, and I'm glad to say that we see the trend in title turnaround days moving downwards. For out-of-state transfers, it's 54 days. Title for in-state transfers, it's 46, and new car titles are taking 20 days for a title turnaround. The Department of Public Safety is also working with the continuous improvement team at the Department of Admin to see if there are other ways to keep that trend line moving downward. For data errors, since the May 1st report, there are data sweeps that go through the system on a daily basis, and we added additional sweep scripts to assist the BCA to avoid, you know, things that, you know, inconsistencies with information that law enforcement is seeing in the system. Sorry. And also in 112, there was a permanent fix for BCA interface issues, and that happened. And so, again, so far so good in that 112 release. And to date, approximately 0.25% of motor vehicle records in MNLARS have required some type of data correction. But, again, we have a sweep that goes through the system on a nightly basis to make sure that any data errors or that we're cleaning those data errors up. For system performance, there hasn't been a huge statistical change. We had 100% performance in April, but then in May we had a very brief outage. So you'll see on the graph next to the bullets and in your report as well that there's been no huge change. We continue to evaluate what we can do to make the system performance better, especially when we release especially when releases like 112 go into the system, we are constantly watching to make sure that the system performance is at least unchanged. For customer service, I'm happy to say that things are getting better with customer service, and you can see that from the difference between January and June. January, the amount of calls that came into the PIC, the percentage of calls that were being answered is 24.5. To the June comparison of 43.7%. And then the email turnaround, the response time is getting better, the amount of responses is getting better, and DVS is also working with the Department of Admin Continuous Improvement Team to see how they can continuously improve their service to the public. For budget and ramp down, I know you're all wondering, and it's something that we are still assessing. Having finished the prioritization process, our goal at this point is to take and build into the system as many of those priorities as possible with the funding that we have left. And so we are assessing what can be built in, how much time each of those functionalities will take to build into the system, and then we're measuring that up against what money we'll need for just ongoing system maintenance and keeping the lights on. So we've got a lot of work to do, but there are definite plans to have that in front of you by the next report, which is on September 11th. And with that, we'd be glad to respond to questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bailey. Ms. Redwing, did you have anything to add or just want to respond to questions?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm happy to respond to questions.
Thank you very much. I do see Mr. Nobles in the audience. Mr. Nobles, and I forgot to invite you up. Is there anything that you wish to come forward and add or testify to before we move on to member questions?
Chairman,
Mr. Noble, state your name for the record, please, and proceed with whatever testimony you wish to impart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the steering committee. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. With me at the table is Judy Randall. She is deputy legislative auditor for the Program Evaluation Division. Mr. Chairman, I think all I would like to add is that, and I think you know this, we have made the issues that continue to be before your steering committee and before others, the public, other public officials, a matter of real concern and urgency for our office, and we are dedicating a lot of our resources to various issues. Ms. Randall is managing a good deal of that effort, and maybe I will just turn to her and have her remind you of the different projects that we have ongoing. So if I could turn to Ms. Randall. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Knowles. Ms. Randall, state your full name, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for OLA's Program Evaluation Division. Thanks for taking a couple minutes to hear from us. I'll just quickly remind you that we are doing four different projects related to MNLARS right now, which is a lot for our office. And I'll just run through them really quite quickly, and then if you have questions, we can go from there. The first one is in response to the law that you all passed last session. We are doing an IT audit assessment of MNLARS. We have recently hired the lead person for that. His name is Mark Matheson. He is a former Minute employee, but we are confident that he does not have a conflict of interest related to MNLARS. He was overseeing the economy line of business there, so if this was a deed system, we'd have an issue, but he had nothing to do with DPS or MNLARS or MNLARS, and he also did not have input into central decisions with Minute. So he will be our lead IT auditor assessing MNLARS. We also plan to hire another person to help him with that effort. He is digging in. He's been with us for about a week, and I expect that he will be reporting to you at your next quarterly meeting. The other initiatives or projects we are doing related to MNLARS. One, we are doing a special review of MNLARS that is being led by Joel Alter, who is our Director of Special Reviews and a longtime excellent employee with OLA. He is focusing kind of on what happened, what went wrong, how did we get to where we were in July of 2017. So he's doing intensive document review. He's doing lots of interviews, talking to current but also former employees and contractors who worked on MNLARS. Our third effort is a financial audit that I know we've mentioned to you before that we were going to do. We are doing a financial audit focused on the transaction accuracy within MNLARS. This is a team of financial auditors that are digging really quite deeply into MNLARS. We are looking at title transactions, tax, registration transactions, wheelage, sales tax, base value, all these things that you've been hearing that MNLARS maybe has been getting wrong. We are digging in with really detailed testing of samples. We are hoping to have a report on that back to you all by the end of August. And then finally, we are doing an evaluation of Minute as a whole. So it's not really just focused on MNLARS, but it's looking more broadly at Minute as an organization, looking at where Minute is in its consolidation in terms of providing technology services to state agencies and how well they're doing that. So those are kind of the four big efforts we are doing right now. And, of course, once we are ready to release our reports, we will let you know and be happy to have more conversations with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Randall. We really do appreciate the update, and we look forward to hearing from your organization. With that, Representative Torkelson.
As long as we have the legislative auditor folks up here, just a couple of not used to all these switches. As long as we have them up here, I'd just like to ask a couple of quick questions. One, when do you expect results that you will be presenting for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, it depends on the evaluation. The financial audit looking at transaction accuracy, we're hoping end of August, and that'll be a full financial audit report. The IT audit assessment, I expect that Mr. Matheson will be reporting to you quarterly with information and may have some sideline conversations with you as well to discuss your priorities, where you'd like him to look at. The special review, we're thinking end of the year, and and that was focused on MNLARS, and then the minute evaluation, which is the broader look, we're thinking January.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, one more question.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is something I intended to ask of the department, too, but as far as these financial transactions and the inaccurate ones that have occurred, do you anticipate that there'll be some effort to go back and fix any of those mistakes, or are we just going to live with what's happened up to this point?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, once we have fully vetted our findings and can report that to you, if we do find that there have been errors, I think there may need to be a couple of different approaches. It depends what types of errors in terms of the extent to which the state can go back and correct the errors. There may need to be legislative changes in law to allow the state to go back and correct some of those errors. For example, if a customer was not charged the right amount in their registration tax because, let's say, the base value was incorrectly too low. I believe that there's a law that says a person can never pay more in their registration tax than they paid the previous year. So if we want to correct that error, if we find one, we may need to do some changing in law. Again, I'd like to have us vet our findings, and we can dig into that law a little bit more. But so it may not be a simple deal.
Anything further?
Well, just a quick follow-up on that, Mr. Chair. So I was not aware of that law. So we heard, some months ago that someone in the department had told a deputy registrar to tell a customer that was being undercharged that it was his lucky day. Perhaps it was more than just his lucky day. Perhaps it's his lucky decade. Is that what you're saying?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, perhaps. Again, I'd like to wait until we have everything vetted. I'm skating on thin ice here because we're still in the middle of doing our work. But I do think it's important to think about the number of vehicles involved and the lifespan of the vehicles that are, in the system. So, yeah, I mean, it could be a decade. It could be 15 years. Vehicles are in these, are in MNLARS for a long time.
Members have any other questions for Mr. Nobles or Ms. Randall? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Senator Newman. Thank you, Ms. Randall. On the, we look to the auditor to kind of help us, be an objective observer, reporter, as we move along the process that this calls for. And so those are those quarterly updates that you'll be providing for us. Ms. Bailey kind of briefly presented that last slide, which is about the budget implications that flow from the legislative session and the ramp down, and what that means. Will your office be helping us understand the efforts to repair MNLARS, address the gaps and the fixes in that context, in that light? I suspect performance measures will be unsatisfactory, and I think they need to be understood in the context of the budget and the resources that the agency is dealing with. Are you going to be factoring that as you evaluate?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I think we will be looking at that everything that we can see related to MNLARS, and certainly if that's an area of interest, we will be digging in. I think our first charge, you know, as outlined in the law, is to do a technical assessment of MNLARS and really, you know, look at how it's performing and efforts related to that. But we will be reviewing the quarterly reports that MNIT puts out and working with them and with you about a pathway forward, and certainly resources factor into that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to that, I would just say that as I have appeared before this group before and other legislative committees, I have mentioned that we were quite aware that many people, including I think all of those at the table, were surprised by the request that came during the legislative session for additional money. And so under the special review that Mr. Alter is conducting, we are trying as best we can to find out not only the rationale for the original budget projections for the MNLARS project and how those were amended over time and why, but also what gave rise to the additional supplementary request and sort out the basis for it, what the money was intended to be used for, and specifically why the legislature was not given more information sooner about the need for that amount of money.
Thank you, Mr. Knowles. Senator Dibble, did you have anything? Any other further questions? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe, Ms. Randall, if you could tell me which of the studies, maybe this is the special review, we'll look into the sort of the leadership process that developed and rolled out and made those decisions and sort of has the overarching authority on how that relationship with their dealers and deputy registers within MNIT and the MNLARS system is processed. Is that the special review that we'll see at the end of the year, or will we see some of that prior to that, maybe at the next session?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I think that will mostly be in the special review. The IT auditor is going to be focusing more on technical aspects, so I don't think we'd see it before the special review, which is end of the year. It may come out a little bit in our broader evaluation of MNIT in terms of how MNIT does its work, but to the extent that those relationships you're talking about are between DPS and dealers, then that wouldn't be captured in the MNIT one.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've heard from the auction folks that there's auction business that has apparently left Minnesota. We've heard anecdotally that car rental companies are titling vehicles in other states because they can't get them done expediently here in Minnesota. I just saw a picture this morning of a delivery truck that a local business rents very cheaply to deliver their products to the homeowner's work site with Wisconsin license plates on it. Will there be any effort by the legislative body to identify how much we've lost?
Ms. Randall.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I think to the extent we can look at some trend data, you know, over time, what were the revenues through the different taxes and licensing fees that MNLARS does now as compared to the pre-MNLARS system, we can look at those broad measures. But I'm not sure that we'll be able to dig into exactly what you're asking for.
Any further questions for Mr. Nobles or Ms. Randall? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming forward. We look forward to your testimony in the future. With that, members, I will open up for questions for any of the prior testifiers. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if Ms. Bailey could come back to the testifying table. Hi. Good to see you again. And a couple questions I think I have is the releases that are going out. And I think I'll also maybe ask one of the deputy registers to come back, too. Maybe Mr. Boston, if you wouldn't mind coming back up as well. But with that, I'm curious as to the release of the editing. As you know, the editing function is such a big deal with the deputy registrars. They want to fix things as they work their fingers and can easily make a mistake. And someday we'll find out why that decision was made, why they didn't want that to have happen in the field. But can you tell me, with the recent 1.12 reversion, what editing capabilities were part of that release that the deputy registrars are now doing?
Ms. Bailey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, it's not the deputy registrars that are doing the editing. It's the liaisons in DVS that work directly with the deputy registrars. Those editing functions that they are able to perform are directly related to plate and sticker inventory, and also just regular everyday human error that is made at the counter. They can't edit any financial transactions, and so it is data entry errors and plate and sticker inventory.
Mr. Chair, and so when they're actually on the phone with the liaison, are they actually making those edits on the screen as they go as a sort of live time? So when the customer is standing there and they've made a mistake, or they've corrected, or they found a mistake, I'm just kind of curious, if one or the other could answer, Mr. Boston, too. I'm curious if we're getting the liaisons in to actually fix what you will hopefully be able to fix quickly down the road on the phone, live time, and they walk out the door and everything's corrected. How's that working for you?
The usual scenario works out like this. If we have the customer in front of us, I hate to say, it usually starts with a 40-minute wait on the phone to get a hold of a liaison. That's part of the problem. Oftentimes, they can fix things right then and there. Oftentimes, we have to fill out an intake form. The problem is, it's so often just a simple fix that we could do right there. An 8 could be a B and a VIN number. The decimal point is wrong in the price of the vehicle. And oftentimes my clerks catch it. But the problem is, it's already adding 40% to our workload. We get it wrong. Suddenly, you double that time at $10 per transaction. That's not a very good thing to do. Now, I'm not asking for the sky in editing, but the common sense factor of right there between the editing and the auditing, we could catch this stuff like we did in the old system. So often we would catch it before it got to the state level, before we would have to have the customer stand there being held hostage for 45 minutes while we get through, and then tell them, hey, come back in a couple weeks. We have to send in an intake form, which also takes more time, by the way, because we're doing screenshots, emails, collecting all that information. It's not a smart scenario.
Mr. Chair, and again, maybe back to Ms. Bailey. As we heard the early deputy registrars talking about their concerns, I think we're seeing some glimmers that things are getting better. We do also hope that this recent release that came out this Sunday is going to continue a pathway of showing some real successes without four steps going back. And it sounds like the Minute team is doing a better job testing. It was good to hear that you had some folks on the phone on Sunday. Before we go live, what do you think? Everybody ready to go? So there's some positive things there. But the one thing that, you know, I keep going back to is the relationship role that you played when you first started in this difficult position to really create the deputy registrars, the dealers. I'm sensing we still have some real issues there. And can you tell me maybe what, in the last 30 days, 60 days, after the surprise announcement that we needed another $43 million to get this program fixed, and all the processes that we went through the session. Session had some really dark days when we had a big veto. We should have gotten some things through. Affects a lot of people here. My question is to you, how are you now planning on the focus on rebuilding this supervisory customer service team that you sort of are leading through your office with both private and public deputy register offices? What is the plan for your office to make sure that that is going to be improved further than what it is today? Today, we're almost on a year anniversary. I know you've only been here since about the first of the year. But what is your plan as sort of that role to fix this, what appears to be Communication is lacking and not being upfront, and there's dishonest things and comments and lack of trust and openness. There are comments that are kind of repeating itself. Your thoughts on that, Ms. Dana, Ms. Bailey.
Ms. Bailey.
Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, you and I have had a lot of conversations about how to, you know, continuous improvement, and I know that, and we heard last week at the Executive Steering Committee that communications is one of those things that we need to continue to improve. I will take responsibility for that. We have a sort of ad hoc communication subcommittee that has not been meeting on a regular basis because we had this reprioritization process that took up so much of everyone's time. We had 3 full days of reprioritization and a lot of other regular meetings that happen on a weekly basis. We are re-upping that regular meeting starting in July, and that's just the result of summer calendars and difficulties around scheduling. There are ways that we can improve on all fronts, and we will continue to listen to both auto dealers and deputy registrars and auto auctions and any other stakeholder that comes to the table, and we'll do everything we can to, you know, continue that collaborative relationship and continue to improve. And that's what I can say I can do today and moving forward. I think it's what I've done, too.
Final question, Mr. Chair. So, again, as I heard from Mr. Lampert, to the dealer representative, the communication has certainly faltered in that area. I hope that can be improved back to the 2-week window that they were toing. But the EVTR system and the vendor, it sure sounds like we've got some issues there that was maybe either well not thought through with a proven vendor. It seems like we really went backwards on that. Do you see today that we should either be looking at a change back to what we had, or do you think the new vendor that you've chosen is well on its way and doing everything they should be doing? I'm just curious about, you know, again, we're coming on the anniversary. It's okay to make a change as we go, but are you convinced this is the right vendor for this position for that dealer issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, I would like my colleague Kate Weeks to answer that question.
Ms. Weeks.
Good morning. My name is Kate Weeks. I'm the Legislative Director at the Department of Public Safety. Thanks for having me. I'd like to just respond to your question. Right now, the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Administration is in a contract with a EVTR vendor. We did go through the procurement process. The contract right now is current. It's my understanding that the dealers and other users of the system participated in testing of the system last week. I think we're moving forward with that experience and that user interaction. So that is where we're currently at with the EVTR system. It's a contract that's in place until September 2019.
2019, you said. And Ms. Weeks, so if in a short amount of time your customers, our dealers, are not happy, do you have an out in that contract where you can get out if that vendor cannot deliver on their contract? Is there a way that you can get out of this and we can switch if we need to?
Ms. Weeks.
Chair members, it is my understanding that the contract does contain provisions in what that would look like.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanson joined us late. Do you have any questions? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, and I apologize for I was at a doctor's appointment that went a little longer than I thought. So. And Ms. Bailey, maybe this question has been answered. So I'm concerned about what happens when the emergency appropriation runs out, and maybe this has been answered already, of when that will occur, and there's no other funds that can be transferred in, or are there any other funds? I mean, if you could maybe, and I apologize if this has already been asked.
Ms. Bailey.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanson, I think I can answer pretty safely that there aren't any other funds to transfer in. So the answer to that is no, but regarding what we're doing now, because the prioritization process is finished, what we are doing now is trying to scope how many releases we can put into the system successfully that contain the priorities that the stakeholders and DVS have set out for us, compared up against what we have left in current resources, and also make sure that we are providing a little bit of money left over for just regular ongoing maintenance and leaving the lights on until the next legislative session. And I don't have a crystal ball. I wish I did. I'm not sure when it's going to be. If we continued with the current resources and the monthly spend that we have right now, we would get to February, mid-February. However, I don't think that takes into consideration what a maintenance budget would look like for the rest of the biennium. And so those are the things that we're currently looking at.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other question is somewhat related, and that's related to Real ID on the dollars there. Do you have sufficient funds for implementation to occur on time there?
Ms. Bailey.
Phase one of the fast driver system is, yes, we have the resources that we need for phase one. And phase one is the full driver service complement that driver's license agents use today. We're all systems go for the October 1st launch. And I think that you all have heard that from us, and you've gotten the briefing. Some of you have gotten the briefing from FAST. We have a FAST Driver Services Executive Steering Committee as well that other deputy registrars sit on. And so we get feedback on the testing that is happening. Training is in full swing, with the Tier 1 training having launched in June. And we feel comfortable, confident, but not too comfortable, you know, trust but verify, as the commissioner likes to say. And so we're keeping a very close eye.
Representative Baker. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just a quick follow-up. So with the funds that were there for the driver's side, there isn't any slippage, or there isn't excess that could be transferred back. It's all going to be encumbered. Is that correct?
Ms. Bailey.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, yes, that's correct.
Ms. Bailey, I just want to piggyback on Representative Hansen's question regarding funding. Included in the report, the June report, there's a sheet on the HUTDF funding. If you recall, during the last session, some money was taken out of HUTDF. I remember not being real pleased about that. And on the sheet that you had provided us, it reflects as of May 14th, appropriated HUTDF funds of $1.3 million. I thought $2.6 had been taken. Am I incorrect on that?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to defer to my colleague again to answer that question, if that's okay. Kate Weeks.
Ms. Weeks? Fine. Okay. That's fine. Ms. Weeks.
Chair members, it was $1.3 million per fiscal year that came in, so it should have been $1.3 million. That is correct.
Thank you. And then to date, have any of those funds been spent on anything other than the PIC Center? Ms. Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask that Kay Weeks answer that question again.
That's fine, Ms. Weeks.
Chair members, it's my understanding that no, it went to the temporary hires that we spoke about during session.
And in terms of going into the future, would it be fair for me to assume that DPS is not going to appropriate any further funds from HUTDF without notifying us?
Chair members, we're still in fiscal year 18. It's my understanding conversations about use of that additional money that's coming in for fiscal year 19 has not happened, but we will keep you informed, just like we did during 2018.
Are there any other funds, Ms. Weeks, other than HUTD funds, that DPS is thinking about appropriating or using or has used and appropriated since we last talked at the end of session?
Chair, members, it's my understanding that no. We are using general fund money to work with the Department of Revenue to hire their seasonal employees to help us with the title turnaround, because that is a huge benefit to our partners and to Minnesotans.
But that money is not coming any out of any other special account that we don't know about.
Chair members, correct.
I would ask that if that situation changes where the Department of Public Safety anticipates accessing any other special accounts, whether it be HUTF or any other account, that I would ask that you please notify us so that we know what you're doing. With that, Representative Torkelson, you had some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just would like to cover a few items here to get on the record and get updates, et cetera. First, I think I would like to clear up this issue of MV2. I'm not sure who wants to address that, but it seems like it's partly a miscommunication and partly just a lack of communication as to what MV2 is, and if you could give me some more information on that, that would be beneficial. It looks like Ms. Redwing might be the resource.
Ms. Redwing, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, my name for the record is Joan Redwing. I'm the interim CBTO of Department of Public Safety and Chief Enterprise Architect for Minute. When I was brought in mid-November of 2017, Commissioner at that time had me pull together a team of senior resources across MNLARS to chart a path forward from where we were in late 2017 and kind of feeling the effects of the launch in 2017. And we pulled together what we thought were our best asks about forming the team to really look at the problems of the system that were in our control and develop a set of processes, procedures, upgrades that was a necessary and very defensible activity, which we all grouped together and called MV2O, but it's really an upgrade of our processes and tools. And it's very much the responsible thing to do at that time due to the less than successful rollout. So we looked at things like our enterprise architecture, the components that served us well, where we needed to make some tuning and upgrades. We looked at our technical stack. I wish Representative Nash was here because I could geek out with him about the technical stack a little bit. And the software development lifecycle practices that served us well and what did not serve us well, including enhancements to testing that we needed to make. And all of these things were wrapped into a white paper for our team that represented what MV2 was. And it's about 7 pages long, really talks about upgrading our Angular framework from a 1.2 to a 6.0, leveraging the cloud to reduce costs in our pre-production environments. So it's a bunch of these things that are very technical in nature and really represent the difference in a system between going from like a Windows 7 to a Windows 8 or an iPhone 6 to an iPhone 7. It's really an upgrade of our tooling and processes.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Redwing. It seems like some people got the impression that MV2 was a complete abandonment of the old system and a venture into something completely new. And I just want to reassure everyone that that's not the case. I believe that's what you're saying. I'm not quite as technical in nature as others.
Ms. Redwing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, you're absolutely right. MV2 is not a new system. It's an area where we stood up some new tooling and are trying out, for example, the the area where we gave editing capabilities to deputy register liaison are using a couple MV2O new tools, and if they prove out to be robust enough and they fix some of these issues, we rolled it out to deputy register liaisons first, and then it is incorporated into the full application. So it's an area where if we want to give editing capability, we don't want to make any more mistakes, right? We don't want to create any more problems. So if we open it up, create some new tooling, standing on the shoulders of MNLARS, using the same database, using the same technologies, it's a section of new pieces of architecture, upgraded architecture. Once we've proven that it works, then in our next planning is how do we roll this editing capability out to all the deputy registrars and do less of a big bang and more of an iterative improvement. We also see this in areas where we have what we call stabilization activities, where we are stabilizing areas of the whole code. And, for example, deputy registrars testified that, yeah, we're fixing defects, 1, 2, 3, the high-priority defects, but we also have to look at the system as a whole and where we have to make the business processes more robust and the efficiency of using the system more robust. And all of that wraps into what we have colloquially, internally, a shorthand term called MV2.
Representative Torres.
Thank you. I'm going to move on. It looked like Mr. Volson had something to add. Is that
Mr. Volson?
I'd like to back up a little bit, back to the driver's license training and such. I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but the added strain and the continual, actually additional bleed, all the training is taken away from our offices this summer for driver's license, is adding to this mess. We've already spent a lot of time online. We've also got a situation where we're going to have 2 days' worth of training for driver's license. I cannot close my office for 2 days' worth of training. For all that matters, the DNR does not want me to close my office for 2 days. And all offices across the state are going to run into the same problem. If we have to have 2 days of training, I can't take my whole staff to do it. Plus, half my staff can't do it because they're brand new, because I'm losing so much staff. And I predict by October, a number of people that I have done the driver's license training on will no longer be working in my office, let alone a lot of other offices across the state. This is more strain that is adding to us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Wilson, for that. And that kind of takes me to an issue I was going to talk about later, but the real ID rollout and the amount of training that's required to get people up to speed, does the department in any way helping the deputy registrars make this transition? And I'm asking the department. I guess, well, I don't know who I'm asking. Somebody who knows something.
Ms. Bailey?
Mr. Chair and members, from a, you know, business perspective, yes, I would say that DPS is helping with the transition. You know, the training, they're doing the training alongside all of the driver's license agents across the state. There are satellite DVS offices that are, you know, sort of the super users of the new system that are there as a resource for other driver's license agents. I know how cumbersome the training is and that it's a busy time of year, but unfortunately that is just, it's what we've got to get through in order for the system to go live on October 1st to be able to provide Minnesotans real IDs should they want one. They don't need one on October 1st, but if they want one, they can go and get one. As long as we're able to provide those real IDs on October 1st, we are considered in compliance by the federal government. We are meeting state statute laid out in front of us, and so we're trying to help. And we're open to additional suggestions through the Driver Services ESC.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad that not everyone needs one on October 1st, or we'd have another disaster on our hands. But you know, very sensitive to the issues with our deputy registrars and how how we have challenged them so dramatically over this last year, and this is just adding another, in my mind, another challenge to them to get this training done and find the time to do all the extra work that they're having to do because of this difficult system that we're dealing with. A couple of other quick issues. I know we're running out of time, but the expedited title situation. Apparently, it sounds like we're going to make that available now, finally, to the deputy registrars, too, and that's good. Tell me, remind me of what happens to that extra revenue.
Ms. Bailey.
Mr. Chair, members, I would love to be able to call up a colleague from DPS. I wouldn't be able to answer that question.
Thank you.
Ms. Weeks.
Hello again. Kate Weeks, Legislative Director at the Department of Public Safety, and I will do my best. The fee for expedited titles, if it is at the counter with the deputy registrar, and they can help me if I misspeak, it is a split fee with the department because we each have a piece in the process for expedited titles. If a person comes directly to the department, then we keep that fee.
And if they go to a deputy, thank you, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. If they go to a deputy registrar, what happens to the fee?
Chairs, members, we split it. I believe it's $20, $10 to the deputy registrar, $10 to the department.
I'm seeing some nodding going on there. Do you have any idea, Ms. Weeks, as to how many, relatively how many, the numbers of expedited titles that have been issued?
Ms. Weeks.
Yep. Chair members, I do not have that, but I can get that for you. What we did see, I know there are some questions in the past about what happened after we launched with the expedited titles. And so it is, it's definitely true that with the number of expedited titles being issued from deputy registrar offices, that did decrease. And so the department also saw that decrease in those numbers with that revenue. The number of individuals that came directly to the department to get expedited titles did not change. We did not see an increase in requests directly to the department. And so right now, the process with the Executive Steering Committee and getting that set back up, I think, is very, very valuable for all stakeholders.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I for one, don't like expedited titles. I think don't think they should be necessary. But as long as they are being made available, we should make them available to deputy registrars too. I feel strongly about that. Another question, this on another area, and that is the area of the request for information as far as looking at the potential of utilizing outside vendors for more of this work. What has happened there? Have you gotten bids in, and when will we see some feedback on that?
Ms. Weeks? Go ahead, Ms. Weeks.
Chair members, we did receive three responses from three different companies, Fast Enterprises, Celtic Systems, and BIS, Business Information Systems, I believe. We are currently pulling together, according to statute, some summary information, and we will be providing those responses to you by August 1st.
I'm going to follow up. Are you done with the RFI?
Yes, I am.
As a follow-up then to the RFI, what have you done with the three responses that you have received to date? My understanding is that you received them by May 31st. What have you done with them so far?
Chair members, I've read them. A lot of it is technical in nature, and so there's been a couple of meetings with some minute staff to try and understand what the information says when we're looking at providing summary information. But that there is, right now we're using those responses to pull together the information, summary information to provide to this Mindler Steering Committee.
Have you been in contact with the companies that submitted the RFIs?
Chair members, no.
How long is it going to take you to prepare the summary that you are referring to that I am assuming that's the document that you are intending to give to the legislature. When is that going to be ready?
Chair, members, by August 1st.
And you're not willing to get it done before then and get it to us sooner?
Chair, members, I would be happy to get it sooner. You know, that is always the goal. There's no reason to hold on to it, but I want to make sure that it is informative for you. And to make sure that when we look at providing the information of the responses that were submitted to us, that there's no information in there that is non-public data.
You've had the RFIs now for about a month. And very honestly, I am aware of what the statute says. But I was kind of hoping that you would have information for us sooner rather than later, given the fact that I frankly think these RFIs are very important. So I would express a little disappointment that it doesn't sound like you have done much more with them than read them. Is there any of the information that you receive from these three companies that you are able and willing to share with us at this time? The raw documents.
Chair, members, I'm not sure what would be beneficial for you right now at this point. I don't have them in front of me. You know, like I said, we are meeting with the agencies looking for through what would be good summary information. You will also receive copies of those submissions. So you will also be able to review them and pull the information that you believe is pertinent.
I suppose I would rather make up my own mind as to whether or not the information would be beneficial to me or not. When you say you are going to provide us with information, you are talking about the summary and not the raw data, the raw documents?
Chair members, correct.
Would it be helpful if I submitted a request for public documents in order to obtain the raw documents that you received from the three companies?
Chair members, you are absolutely free to do that, and we will provide them.
Commissioner Clyburn, I see you reacting. If you would care to come forward. Apparently not, and I'm not trying to create confusion, but it seems to me that we have had three RFIs submitted to the state of Minnesota, and I happen to believe that that's an important component of what is going on. It is mandated by statute, and all I'm asking for is the information, and it, I feel like there's some reticence. Mr. Eichhorn.
Mr. Chair, for the record, John Eichton, Legislative Director for Minute. We're happy to give you whatever any information you'd like, but it's not ours to give. It is the statute that you put into law calls on the Department of Public Safety to do the RFI, get the responses. I can say in meetings with them, we've offered to help with any analysis that they want with that. And I believe Kate just offered to give you the full responses. We would want to put them through a security information review. So that's where Minute would come in, is to make sure there's nothing in there that's non-public data. But having seen the responses myself, I don't anticipate there's going to be anything in there that would be non-public information, as it was a public response to a request for information from vendors. So there's no intent to withhold anything from you.
All right. I appreciate that explanation, and we will move on. You may want to get started because I am going to submit a request for information, and I would like to have that soon so that we can begin to look at it. Whether or not I'm going to understand it is another thing. I would also like to have the summary sooner rather than later, and we will be having upcoming hearings on this matter. And that's why I'm pushing a little bit, so that we would have something in advance to look at before we have our next meeting. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note for everyone here that we do intend to call another meeting of this committee on August 16th. That doesn't line up perfectly with some of the dates that have been mentioned today, so those of you that were looking at submitting reports around September 1st, if there's any chance of moving your work up a little bit, that would be very helpful. We've been wrestling with dates and trying to figure out what will actually work for getting people here from our perspective, and I realize this may not be the most convenient date for everyone in the room, but I believe that's the date that we're going to end up with, unless something dramatic changes and it forces us to move that date to another time. But August, we'd like to get another meeting in yet this summer, and August 16th seems to be the date that is most widely available. So if you can, all of you that are working on this issue from various points of view, if you can try and prepare more information for us to be available on August 16th, that would be very helpful. And anything we can get in advance, as Chair Newman has noted, would also be helpful, so we can digest it a little bit before the meeting and perhaps be better informed, and we all work together to try and untie this knot.
Representative Baker, I've got you down as a question. Do you have a follow-up?
Just a question, Mr. Chair.
Right.
Yep. My final comment to him. This is actually a commissioner question. If I could ask Commissioner Claiborne to come up. I was earlier following up with the status with the dealer question about communications improving and getting that back on track. I was convinced that Ms. Bailey is going to take care of that. One of the other questions that was sort of requested today, too, Commissioner, was from Mr. Vossen, and with all that happened last year, we as a group didn't deliver on the reimbursements for the deputy registrars, and I think all of us are disappointed we didn't give them the chance to have that reimbursement. The one thing that he was requesting also was, I sure would like a meeting with the governor. Is there a way that you could help facilitate a meeting with the folks that are on the front lines to meet directly with the governor in the near future so that he can feel and hear firsthand some of their concerns? And I'm hoping they can share with the governor what's working now, too. Is that something that you would help in facilitating Mr. Vossen's request? And I think when I was also at the deputy register meeting back in Hutchinson, that was something that kind of came up. And I thought that was a very fair question. I think it should be asked by the commissioner, because I know you have a big part in maybe helping facilitate that. So I just want to see your thoughts on that, if I could.
Commissioner Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Joanna Claiborne. I am the Commissioner of Minnesota Information Technology Services. I can certainly take that request back to the governor, but whether he will or will not is not something I can speak to at this time. But I certainly would go back and communicate the information.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner, is it a reasonable request that they would have a meeting with the governor, in your opinion?
Commissioner Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, members, you're asking me to speculate something that is well above my pay grade. That would be for the governor to decide.
Final question. Would you support that if you had the decision? Is that something you could support?
Commissioner Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, members, I am always for open communication, but I don't control the calendars. And so with that said, it is certainly something I will bring back to the governor, but I do not control whether that does or does not occur.
Thank you.
Any further questions by any members? Seeing none, Commissioner, nice to see you. Thank you for coming to the table. And with that, we stand adjourned.
Thank you.